State Senator Dawn Oyer, welcome back to the Publix Radio.
Thanks for having me, Ian.
Let's start with the big news of the week. Attorney General Peter Noronha has rejected the proposed merger of Rhode Island's two largest hospital groups, Lifespan and Care New England. He says this would be too powerful a monopoly and that it would adversely affect healthcare consumers in Rhode Island by raising costs and having other negative consequences. Lifespan owns Newport Hospital, which is in your home community. I wonder, now that this merger has been rejected, how do you think the state should approach the issue of what the future is for its hospital landscape and how to improve healthcare in Rhode Island?
Sure. Thanks, Ian. So I think that we're in a really unique time, obviously, and hopefully what's the tail end of a pandemic while we're also looking at this healthcare merger. The thing that I think gives the unique perspective is that, you know, Newport, because we are not in the urban core of the state, I've already heard actually from constituents about concerns about moving services away from Newport Hospital, people having to travel upstate to get to their appointments. So I really do think looking towards an approach that's going to make sure that we're maintaining the quality of care, maintaining the services throughout our healthcare system. And I also think that we need to, especially if we're looking at a world where we're trying to figure out how we're going to live with COVID, that we need to recognize that the hospital systems are going to continue to be under strain. And so I think that any future conversations need to take that into account as well.
One thing that Attorney General Noronha said during his news conference was that healthcare strategy in Rhode Island should not be done on a transaction-by-transaction basis. So while we all support the idea of quality healthcare, what should be done to create a more thoughtful and long-term strategy for healthcare and the hospital landscape?
Yeah, I think that there does need to be a kind of a backup approach, a 30,000 foot view. And I think that, you know, the equitable access to care in the different corners of our state is incredibly important. And I think that, again, we need to really kind of take a step back. Also, Rhode Island is an aging population on top of that. So I do think that there needs to be a reimagining of these systems, because there is a lot of money in these healthcare systems, but it seems to continue to increase costs for consumers and have lower quality output for consumers while they're paying those increased costs. So, you know, I'm grateful for the Attorney General's review, and, you know, I look forward, I'm sure that Chair Miller with the Health and Human Services is going to have thoughts on this as well. And I look forward to working with my Senate colleagues to really tackle this problem as we move forward.
Let's shift gears to talk about climate change. That's an issue that I know you're concerned about as chair of the Senate's Environment Committee. A report out this week by federal climate scientists warns that the sea level will rise a foot along the U.S. coastline by 2050. The consensus seems to be that we're not doing enough as a nation to face this threat. Where do we go from here? What do you see as being the key steps to move forward in confronting the threat of climate change?
Sure. So I think we need to really pivot to a carbon-free future. And I think, you know, continuing to both mitigate the problem by not spewing more climate pollutants into the air, while also making sure that we're looking at adaptation. So one thing that I'll say that Rhode Island has done a good job at in the past few years is that we've required planning on the local level as part of the comprehensive planning to look at climate change and climate change impacts. I know a few municipalities are really ahead of the curve. Town planner Kate Mishaw has been doing a great job looking at that issue and trying to really, really kind of support the planning in her town. But I think we really do need to be looking at both the federal infrastructure dollars as well as ARPA funds and see how we can really support our municipalities counties, our cities and towns, because they're really bearing the brunt of these costs. So, you know, having utility lines that are in flood zones, any sort of those kind of public service lines, and as much as we can use both federal infrastructure funds and ARPA funds, so that way we are making our systems more resilient to the very likely future flooding, and not have to do that in a way that's going to cost ratepayers the funds to make those improvements to the system, I think needs to be a high priority.
To follow up on that, you were a sponsor last year of the Act on Climate, a law enacted to reduce Rhode Island's emission of contributors to the global warming. The president of your chamber, Dominic Ruggiero, has unveiled legislation that would get Rhode Island to 100% reliance on renewable created electricity by 2030. How do we get from here to there? Will that cause cost shocks for consumers? How do we get from here to there on that, what sounds like a worthy goal?
Yeah, that's right. I'm very proud to be a co-sponsor on that bill and grateful to the Senate president for championing it. It's an important next step for us to really put our money where our mouth is and make sure that we're taking the next steps forward to really act on climate, transitioning our energy systems off of fossil fuels and into a clean, green energy future is really critically important. I think offshore wind is a huge element of that. You know, Rhode Island has been a leader in that, first domestic offshore wind turbines in the ground off Black Island. And it's a job growth opportunity for us to be able to leverage those jobs in this industry as we move forward. So I think that that 100% renewable energy bill that the Senate president has definitely will help make strides forward for that. You know, and again, I think that there are dollars out there between the infrastructure bill and that we should be looking to make sure that we're funding those systems upgrades to the utility system so that it's not done on the shoulders of the ratepayers. And I'm also would love to see the Build Back Better legislation pass on the federal level as well to help inject additional funding into these efforts.
The General Assembly is expected to unveil in early March a plan for legalizing recreational marijuana. So far, with Rhode Island having medicinal marijuana, it seems like people have had to add a lot of money to get into the business. Do you think this new proposal will do enough to offer an adequate opportunity for people who have faced the downside of the war on drugs?
Yeah, I think that there's elements of the bill to allow for specific contracting for small businesses and for women and minority business owners to make sure that they're able to participate in the market. I think the issues you raised are concerns that I've had all along with this legislation to make sure that we are not, you know, we don't want to be in a position where we are recriminalizing marijuana, and we don't want to be in a position where we are only advancing the efforts of investors at the expenses of the communities who've been overly burdened on the war on drugs. So, you know, if we can get to a bill that looks at all of those issues and again, make sure that we legalize it in a smart way, that's definitely a bill that I can get behind.
You were facing a challenge for a while by a candidate supported by a progressive group known as the Rhode Island Political Cooperative. That attracted notice because you are certainly known as a progressive in your views and outlook. That candidate wound up dropping out after there was some exposure of her anti-vaccine and anti-refugee views. And what do you think this tells us about the Rhode Island Political Cooperative and the effect that it's having on the progressive movement in Rhode Island?
Yeah, you know, I ran for office to represent, constituents, and I'm fortunate to represent the people of Newport and Jamestown. And I think it's very unfortunate when there are organizations who drive disinformation and drive disinformation in order to advance distinct personal goals. I think that that's incredibly unfortunate, and I think it disrupts and damages the willingness of people to get involved in the political process. You know, I came to this work having been a community organizer and caring deeply about the community that I represent. I mean, I lived there over a decade before I ran for office myself and was deeply involved in the community and some more supporting community efforts before I ran for office. And, you know, I'm proud to have worked with, you know, to get many bills across the finish line since my time in the legislature to codify Roe v. Wade, as you mentioned, the Act on Climate, advocating for housing, advocating for voting rights, the school bond. And I think, you know, I really try to focus on the issues that I know my constituents care about and get those issues across the finish line. And I think that that should be our focus, is making sure that we're going to be advancing issues that are going to make lives better for Rhode Islanders.
On a related note, the state Senate used to be a lot more sedate. All of the lawmakers, even the Republicans, were mostly in lockstep. But that's changed over the course of recent years. There are more outspoken progressives like Sam Bell and Tiara Mack. And there's a little more ideological diversity in the chamber. How has that affected the effort to work for some of the progressive goals that lawmakers like you support?
Yeah, so I think as with any other deliberative body, you know, we are not a monolith. And so I think that that is very reflective of the public right now. You know, we're at a point in time where people are more divided than ever. People are talking in their own silos, who are not working together, who are not coming together on issues, and who are kind of focusing on the differences as opposed to the similarities. Again, having come from a background of community organizing and trying to bring people together to solve big problems and get big things done, I'm also a middle child. Maybe that's part of it. But, you know, for me, I like to find the commonality. Like, where can we find common values? Where can we find common understanding? And again, to move big issues forward. So I think right now, one of the things I'm really focused on as well as this, the deep frustration I think that the members of the public have. And I think that that's something that we need to pay attention to as elected officials, and need to get a deeper understanding of our constituencies, where that frustration lies and how we can address it. I mean, we're at a point in time where we have you know, corporate heads who are coming back with record profits, record dividend payouts. We have low wages. You know, we're in a Gilded Age 2.0. Folks are worried about inflation. Meanwhile, we're seeing a world where folks are paying out corporate dividends and corporate profits at records not seen in recent times. So to me, those are the issues that I think that Rhode Islanders care about. And I'm going to continue to, you know, put my head down in this legislative session and focus on all of those things.
And one final question for you on national politics. As you say, there are many people who decry what you describe as a Gilded Age 2.0. At the same time, despite some good economic news, inflation has been a burden on many Americans in Joe Biden's presidency, raising a lot of uncertainty about the outlook for Democrats in Washington. How concerned are you about that? And what do you think Democrats need to do to make the case to American voters?
Yeah, I think that there is really this, you know, we need to definitely call out the corporate greed and not let that inflation message just stand on its own. You know, when you have, again, the companies that are on one hand pivoting to this inflation talking point are making record profits, paying out record dividends, you know, then they turn around and they use those dividends to pay the trade groups to go back to lobby in Congress and lobby at the State House for solutions that they claim are business friendly. And they do that on the shoulders of small businesses who are working people and are the backbone of our economy as well, and use that as a dividing issue in economics. And so to me, I think getting back to basics and making sure that we are fighting for an economy that works for working people is the future that I think would bring a strong future for the Democratic Party.
State Senator Dawn Oyer, Democrat of Newport, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
That's all the time we have for this week. You can find a lot more on our website at thepublicsradio.org. I'm Ian Donis.